Okay, everyone, looks like this is super important, these classes, because every kind of obstacle that they try, that can happen, happens over here. So we're going to start again. And I guess the second time will be better than the first time. Okay, so we were holding over here, chapter 8, in this amazingly important talk. The amazingly important talk over here, called First Things First, Parshas Bereishis, Dvar Malchus, in which we're learning the greatness, the value, and the essential core, essential in this talk, let's put it this way. In this talk, the Rebbe reveals the indescribable value and prime would be the prime value, or what is going on over here? Are someone calling because there's a problem with the sound or what? Huh? It looks like we got sound. This is on. This is on. We should be fine now. Okay, let's start again. I'm having so much. Okay, making sure we're good. Okay, I think we're good. Okay, someone who's there, who's been sending me before messages, there's no sound. Please give me a message that we do have sound, because I think we should have. Hop on quickly. Just give me a message. Yes. Okay, here we go. Okay. So this amazing talk, this is part four of the talk, First Things First, in which we are learning about the role and the place where the Jewish people have in this world, in which from the very beginning of the Torah, from the very first words of the Torah, God already declares that the Jewish people are the cornerstone of creation. Meaning not only are they at the center, at the core of existence in terms of their souls, that is utterly beyond even creation. But even the existence of the Jewish people in the world, that as well is called Reishis. Reishis meaning the beginning. Reishis meaning the cornerstone. Reishis meaning the primary, the nucleus of creation. All of creation is meant to serve and evolve and rotate around the Jewish people and the Torah. And therefore, as a result of the blessings the Jewish people bring to the world, they bring all of creation, all the nations of the world, to perfection, to eternity, to an elevated state of existence. Why? Because a world without the Jewish people is a godless world. The world with the Jewish people is a godly and a world infused with God, a world, a home for Hashem. God's access point to the world is through the Jewish people, but not only the souls of the Jewish people, but as we learned in the earlier three classes, even in the body of the Jewish people. And when we say in the body, it's not only the body as well, because God made a choice and chose the Jewish people's bodies to be the where he connects and most invests himself into the physical, but even more than that, because this is a matter of choice. The other connection that God has to the Jewish soul, to the neshama of the Jewish people, has to do with the qualities of the soul. This has nothing to do with the qualities of anything. It's a pure choice coming from God himself without any reason, just because. And when a person makes a choice, or a being makes a choice, and that includes God also, makes a choice without any reason at all, just because, that choice is emanating from their essence. So it's the essence of God that has attached himself to the essence of the Jew, to the Jewish body. So more than the essence of God is revealed in his relationship with Israel and the soul, his essence is more revealed in his attachment to the Jewish body. And as a result of that, this is something that the Jewish people need to know. And therefore, Jews need to know, as we learned in last class, that the Jews are not at the mercy of the nations of the world. Of course, there's tremendous appreciation when the nations of the world are assisting. There's tremendous appreciation when there's American military sending its soldiers at the risk of their lives to come and assist. And for that, we, the Jewish people, have to say thank you. But at the same time, we need to know that it's the blessing for the United States to stand up for Israel. Because those who bless them, they will be blessed. And the Jewish people are not for one second dependent on the mercies of the nations. Our existence, quite on the contrary, all the nations of the world are dependent for their well-being on Israel and on the Jewish people. That's the godly truth. Because God created the entire world for the sake of Israel and for the sake of the Jewish people. That's intense, but that's the truth. Now, this is something that not only is it the truth that the Jewish people need to know and should know, but the nations of the world are also supposed to and will eventually come to recognition of this. And here is where we see also that, you know, how this the Rebbe doesn't say in the talk, but you can kind of explain what's going on. Because in the reactions that you're seeing today, on the one hand, I think the majority of the world population is standing by Israel in a very deep way, are shooken up beyond anything to what the world has seen just recently, and is realizing that this is a war against humanity, but it's playing out as a war against the Jewish people. It's a war against any civilization, which is playing out against the Jewish people. But the real truth of the reason why people feel so strongly for Israel, on the deepest level, as we're going to learn later in the talk, is because at the deep core level, creations want a godly world. The humanity wants a world with God invested in it, because that's the ultimate blessing for humanity. And that's the reason, on a deep, even super rational level, there is a bond with Israel taking place. On the other hand, we see everybody's coming out of the woodworks. We see a hatred to Israel that is inexplainable, to the Jewish people that's inexplainable, that atrocities being done, and today it's being filmed and shown to everybody with such a ferociousness and such an ugliness, that with a hatred that has no explanation. Because again, if God's connection, the root of it all is God's connection to Israel, to the Jewish people, is one that's beyond all explanation and all reason. It's a wonder, as we're going to see soon in the course of this talk, at the conclusion of the talk. It's one of the wonders. It's not just one of them. It is the wonder of all wonders, because it defies all logic and explanation. And therefore, the reaction towards it is also going to spark a irrational response. To some people, a super rational response, and to some people, I would call it irrational, dark response. Because those who, since God created good and evil in the world, evil will stand against this with all of its ferociousness. And that's what you see Hamas is. And what you're watching also, those who sadly in the world, I know they're a minority. It's a minority that's pretty loud. But yet that minority that's coming out and sympathizing with Hamas and so on and so forth, is just displaying a hatred towards God. That's really what it is. So now let's take a look further and how the Rebbe is going to explain amazingly how this is a process that has to reveal God's choice of Israel and the Jewish people, which really means God says to the world, if you want me, you got to want my people. And I express myself in this world via my people. And how do I show that my people are my people? By me giving them the land of Israel. This is theirs for eternal gift. That's why this is the most hottest topic in the world, because this is where it's all hinged, especially moments before God is completely going to settle into this world in a revealed way. He's going to reside in his holy temple on earth. It's with the Jewish people as his nation, as his neighbors, as his people in the land of Israel, surrounded by the rest of the world, enlightened by the Jewish people, elevated by the Jewish people. Obviously, those that are supporting it, those that are not, I don't know what the story is going to be. But this is really, really amazing what's happening here. And these words are so pertinent right now. Okay. So now we are going to see, let's continue. We're holding chapter 8. Rebbe is going to connect it to events that there's something that's taking place in the year when the Rebbe spoke this talk was in 1991. But in the Hebrew year, we already transitioned into the year 5752, Tavshin Nun Beis. So the Rebbe says that this concept, how special the Jewish people are and how their physical existence as well is above and beyond all of creation. And it's primary, not above and beyond. It is the core of creation and of the world and of the physical world and of the material world. And that's, again, very important to emphasize. And it's unchanging because it's not, it wasn't based on God choosing them because of any kind of Jewish behavior, any kind of holy behavior. God chose the clay, so to speak, the raw material without any refinement. And he said, this is mine. To understand what I'm saying, listen to the earlier classes. So the Rebbe says, this particular year, this is being highlighted more than ever before. Now, this year, right now, in the year 32 years later, in the year 5784, we're echoing and even stronger than what the Rebbe was saying then in 5752. So let's hear the words that the Rebbe was saying in 5752. To give you a little introduction, we at that time, we're going to get to that part, but at that time, the most amazing thing happened. The Soviet Union had 3 million Jews trapped for years and years behind the Iron Curtain. It was a huge, huge prison for all, for the Jewish people, getting, you know, making their lives miserable and definitely not allowing them to live openly and freely as Jews and observe the Torah and the mitzvot. And in 5751 and 5752, everything turned around. They opened up the doors. Not only they opened up the doors, they were assisting Jews and giving money to the Jewish people, assisting them in leaving the country and going, migrating to the land of Israel or going to other places in the world where they can live freely as Jews. So this shift, the Rebbe is seeing it as part of the messianic shift, part of the influence, even though it was still exiled, but since we're shifting into the messianic age, nations of the world are changing their attitude to the Jewish people that until then they persecuted them. And Russia was a place of persecution, of pogroms, of all kinds of horrific treatment, and things were changing. And the Rebbe speaks about the United States' attitude to the Jewish people, which is phenomenal compared to what the Jews have been through throughout the entire exile. All of these are indications that the world is finally making peace, accepting this, realizing this, which is all part of the world reaching its state in which it can exist in the messianic state. That's the idea that we're building up over here. Phenomenal, phenomenal. Okay, so now let's see. So the year 5750, the Rebbe had a custom that, for, I don't know exactly, I think it started in the early 1980s, where the Rebbe would coin a phrase in which he would label every single one of the Hebrew years. He would label it, and basically, he would give it a name, and by that, he would define the year, and obviously, he would seek a very positive and a very blessed definition that will bring blessings. Many of them were connected to the coming of Mashiach, because that's obviously from when, you know, that's the blessings that are the ultimate blessing. So that year, the year before this, 5751, the Rebbe referred to the year, let's start with 1990, 5750, when the Rebbe said the time of redemption has arrived. In 5790, at that time, the Rebbe coined the year Yeh Tehei Shnas Nisim. This is going to be a year of miracles. And again, that's when the Soviet Union began to collapse. The entire world in 1990, going into 1991, protected Israel by taking down Saddam Hussein with all of his missiles poised towards Israel. Israel didn't even have to go to war. Saddam Hussein was threatening a Holocaust in Israel threatening to use chemical weapons and whatever, whatnot, Scud missiles and who knows what. And yet, the rest of the world formed an incredible alliance and eliminated that threat. These are powerful miracles the Rebbe was indicating, calling that year the year of miracles. The next year, which was 5751, the Rebbe referred to it as the year that I will show you wonders. Hinted to in the Hebrew word Tavshin Nun Aleph, spelled Hayei Tehei Shnas Arenu Neflos. I will show you wonders, which is one of the prophecies regarding messianic times that God says, like you went out of Egypt, I will show you wonders. The next year, 5752, which is when this talk was given right at the beginning of the year, the Rebbe had phrased the year and called the year, this will be the year Teheshnas Niflois, a year of wonders. But instead of the Aleph, which stands for Arenu, you have a Bet, and it stands for Bakol. Let there be wonders in everything. Or, as the Rebbe puts it, or another one was Niflaos Ba, let there be wonders in it. So he says, what does that mean? He says two things. Number one, he says that when you say that I will show you wonders, that means during the year you'll see wonders. But the wonders are kind of not really connecting yet so much to time and space. It's not becoming part of the time. It's still like godly lights from above that are shaking the creation, that are shaking the world. But a much deeper level is that these powerful energies of divine energies are integrated and assimilated and become the definition of the time itself. The time itself becomes a time of wonders. He says that happens in the year 5752. The wonders, the divine revelation becomes so embedded in the world that it becomes, when you think about time itself, you say this is not just a year, this is a wondrous year. The year itself is a good year, a godly year, an incredible year of revelation. The year itself. Also, is that the miracles, the wonders are going to happen in everything, Bakol and everything. It's not just going to be in one avenue, one aspect of things, in terms of protection, in terms of liberation, in terms of sustenance, in terms of, you name it, whatever blessing the world needs, the miracles are going to come in every aspect of life. That's what the Rebbe was saying at that time. Bakol. Now, he says, but now let's analyze when we say wonders. The word we're using is niflaot, which means wonders. But the root of the word wonder in Hebrew is pele. Pele means a wonder. The word nif, when you add a nun to it, it becomes nifle. And when you make it plural, it becomes niflaot. It becomes wonders. So what happens with the nun? So when you add a nun to the word pele, it becomes nun plaos. Nun plaos means the wonders of nun, or 50 times wonders. So the Rebbe says that itself is amazing. A wonder itself means something that is beyond, is a act of God that is above nature. That's a wonder. That's why you can't process. You can't explain the concept rationally. You can't explain it logically. You can't explain it based on the laws of the world. It won't explain the phenomenon. So it's a wonder. It's clearly an act of God. You throw up your hands, you say, God, you stunned me. Now, that's even wonder itself. If you're saying 50 wonders, that means that it multiplies 50 times. How powerful that becomes. So and the number 50 really is a number. We know Jubilee is 50 years. So it's the ultimate number of the divine. It's the number of eternity, of forever. So it's not just a miracle, a fluke, a temporary, like a lightning of God's light, and then it disappears. It's something that's already happening, and it's connected to the eternal wonders of the future. That's the idea. It's forever. We're tapping on the ultimate of the wonders. Fine. And that itself becomes the year itself. That's the idea. Now, but here's the beauty. Here's where it's so powerful. So the Rebbe comes and he says, wait. Now, which wonders are we talking about? Miracles. But primarily, the Rebbe says, I'm referring to something very specific. The ultimate wonder, the ultimate revelation of divinity is his love for the Jewish people. His choice, his choice that he chose the Jewish body, as we spoke earlier, defies all logic. Because as mentioned, it's not based on any reason that can explain why these people over anybody else. And again, as we discussed, it's not contingent on any quality of the body in terms of the body having done God's will or so on and so forth. Even a Jewish man or woman that will never, ever, and did never did do a mitzvah, God has still chosen that body and attached himself in his essence to that body. That's a wonder of wonders. But what's the point that wonder is now? That's the wonders that is being revealed, which means the world will start catching on to the uniqueness of the Jewish people and the right of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, because if the Jewish people are God's people, then God gave them the land. So it's one thing that the Jewish people have always studied this and known this. The nations of the world were pretty hostile to it. And then this starts to becoming the narrative in which people begin to accept it, and their attitudes start changing. And it's going to become, as the point of it, that it becomes part of the year, means it starts to penetrate into the world. Now, by first prefacing the Rebbe's, now, where do you see that? Where do you see that the attitude? So here's where the Rebbe brings in what I mentioned earlier, what's happening right now, the Rebbe says, in Russia. At that time, the Soviet Union had been collapsing over the last 2 years before. But at this time is when they swung the gates open and they started not only allowing people to leave, whoever wanted to go, but they were giving financial assistance. It used to be in the early days, they hardly let anybody go. And even if they let someone go, they made the people such hardship that they had to leave any bit of money that they had behind in Russia. They were allowed to take bare minimum out. Now the government itself is funding the exodus, which is incredible. Russia is such an anti-Semitic country for hundreds of years. In the days of the Tsar, the pogroms, and they're not any better during the time of Stalin, during the time of the communists. Horrific. And they had such a change of heart. Millions of people. How does that happen? If not for something core essential in humanity that's changing. That's what the Rebbe is saying. In terms of its acceptance and recognition of the Jewish people. Now, but let's preface something and understand something. This appreciation of the Gentile world to the Jewish people is something that is going to be fully manifest in Messianic times. It's going to be to the fullest degree. As Isaiah says, that the nations will go to your light, which means they will appreciate and understand that Israel is the light of the world. They will all come to say to Israel, guide me, teach me, inspire me. Israel will be the shining beacon of light for all of humanity. Will raise the world up and educate in every aspect of human of the advance of humanity will be led by the Jewish people, and the nations will appreciate it tremendously. So much so that reciprocation is going to be another verse in Isaiah. This is in chapter 49, verse 23. Kings will raise your children. In other words, kings coming from the entire world, presidents, kings, noblemen, whoever it is, government leaders. We're watching now government kings coming from the leaders of the world are coming from across the world to support Israel. We're watching that now. But in the Messianic age, people will come and will say, listen here, you need babysitters. You need people to rear, raise, and take care. We're available. You just study Torah. You should be unbothered by anything else. It says that the women, noble women, wives of presidents, if you might say, leaders of the world will come and say, we'll nurse your children. We'll be your wet nurse so that you don't have to worry about anything. You can just study, learn, bring the godly knowledge to us. I have to interject with something really amazing. The Rabbi Shmuel Eliyahu, he's the rabbi of Tzfat, spoke at one of his talks. I don't know when the talk was given, but I think it was very recently. I'm just going to mention it very briefly. Is he said that his son is in the Knesset. He's one of the Knesset members. Was chased down by an Italian, by someone from Italy, by an Italian official in the government, trying to say, I got to meet with you, I got to meet with you. And he didn't know what he wants from me. But finally, he met with him over Zoom. Anyways, this guy is basically telling his Israeli counterpart, and he says, "Listen here, you know, I watched I might as well say the idea because this is really this crazy idea. This just happened." He says, "I sit. My office is right across the street from right across from Titus is the Arch of Titus in Rome, in which there is a depiction of the Romans destroying the temple and bringing the temple, taking the Jewish people into captivity and bringing the vessels of the temple. In other words, the symbol of our victory 2,000 years ago over the Jewish people, in which we massacred, butchered, and killed and crucified you guys and did terrible things to you and exiled you for 2,000 years close, that you're still in exile. Looks like you deserved it. This is what he said. And God, you know, kind of approved, or else we would never have been able to do it. But this is what happened. But now you've come back to your land. You've survived the exile. You've come back miraculously to your land. Looks like you deserve it as well. And you have a blessing of God like no other people have ever had. You are the recipients of a divine blessing. Again, this is the Italian minister telling this to Rabbi Eliyahu's son, one of the Knesset members. And he says, you have a blessing. He says, there's such growth and there's such futuristic thinking and there's such amongst your children, there's entrepreneurs and you're building families and you're having children and there is such incredible future in the land of Israel. Italy, he says, is in terrible decline. Young people have no values at all. No one wants to get married. They don't want to have children. They want to have a good time. No one is thinking about the future. He says, you should know in 20 years, Italy is going to be an old age home. And all the youth is going to be migrations that are coming in from Africa, coming in from other places. We've lost our country, he says. And it's not only us. It's all of Europe. We see ourselves literally. We see ourselves dying out. We see ourselves finished. The entire Roman Empire, I mean, Italy's past, Italy's history is now coming, completely being destroyed in front of our eyes. You are the opposite. We need, and we understand why, you guys have God's blessing and you have the Torah, you have divine enlightenment. God gave you the values of life and how to live life. We need you to teach us. This is what he says. We need you. We have to set up some kind of a partnership. You have to send your people to come teach our children values of how to live. Isn't this wild? But here is the next step, is what he said, which was crazy. I mean, crazy. This is all before the war, right? Before this comes to happen. He said as follows. You know, we have the vessels the Vatican is holding in our cellars and our deep vaults. We have vessels of your temple because we destroyed it. Now, these are the very vessels that when you had it in your holy temple, this was what was bringing down the divine blessing and the divine enlightenment. The light that was coming from you guys and to teach the world was coming through these vessels. They're sitting in our vaults. They're not being used for anything. They're being wasted away over there. It's no good. He says, so you know what? He says, if what it takes, if this is what it would take for us to make an agreement with you and an exchange that you will set up a system to come down to Italy and figure out how to reach our youth, we will return these vessels to you. He says, it's not going to be easy. Obviously, this is the Italian government and the Vatican is its own rulership. But he says, we are willing. We're going to make it happen. We'll give back these vessels of the Holy Temple to you guys. We need your guidance. Imagine that. Isn't that crazy? And this is what the verse has already prophesied. Kings of the world will be will raise your children and noble women will nurse your children, your babies. That's the future. So that's messianic times, the Rebbe says. But as a preparation for that, so the Rebbe says, if you take a look throughout history, mostly the nations did not recognize it. But there were those who did, even throughout all of history. The Rebbe points to an amazing story. The Talmud says in Tractate Zevachim. Talmud says on page 19, on the top of the page. Talmud says that one of the sages relate that I met this and this person, Rabbi Nassin or Rabbi Huna Bar Nassin, I think his name was, and he told me that he met a Persian king. His name is Izgamurd, something like that. King of Persia. Talk about Iran. King of Persia. And I came for an audience before him. He either called me over or he got up from his throne. He went over to me. He saw that my belt that he wore on his robe was a little high, maybe up here. And the Talmud says the law is that the priests, when they worked in the temple, they wore a special belt, but the belt had to be below their elbows because once from the elbows and onwards is called the sweaty, is the place of sweat. So you're not supposed to put the thing over there. You put it below. So this is what the Persian king comes. He gets up. He lowers my belt lower. And he says, you are the verse. Aren't you the people that God refers to as a empire of priests and holy people? So you should be dressed like priests. Priests are not, you're not looking your best. This is what happened. This is what related. And then he relates and he said, I went to Amemar, who was another sage. I told him what happened. I was blown away that the king himself said, Jewish people, you gotta look like the, you have to fulfill your role. So this sage said to me, wow, by you, it was fulfilled already, a prophecy of the future. Prophecy of the future is kings, kings will raise you, will educate you. Here, a Persian king is coming to beautify the Jewish people. So the Rebbe is giving that as an example of people recognizing the Jewish people as a chosen people way back in the days of the Talmud. This is, 1800 years ago. And, but the Rebbe says, so you had that? And he says, and as it is known, that the nations of the world also refer to the Jewish people as the chosen people. We spoke about this in the last few classes. Now, this increased in the later years, because sadly, the Rebbe doesn't want to say it, but sadly, throughout the ages, the Jewish people were treated the opposite, were spat upon, were treated like the filth of the earth, and persecuted. Everything anybody wanted to do was able to do to them. However, he says, in the latter years, we're seeing a tremendous shift. Especially the Rebbe praises the United States of America and other countries. But particularly regarding America, he says it's a nation of kindness that allows the Jewish, gives permission to the Jewish people to do their service of God with tranquility and calmness of their body. No threat, no fear. And not only that, but they're actually assisting them financially. There's a lot of aid and so on and so forth. And America also assists Israel in the land of Israel, extends their aid. So this is a shift in the human consciousness regarding the Jewish people. Now, to add to this, he says, it became just, this has been already, Rebbe's talking in 1990. This is already in the United States from the 1950s. Such so much of the Jews post-Holocaust came to America and were treated basically incomparably better than what the Jews suffered in Europe throughout all their time that they were living there in other countries. But in the recent years, he says, it's becoming even more when, especially last year, the Rebbe is talking in 1991, he says, and the beginning in 57, 51, and beginning of this year, 57, 52, regarding what's happening in Russia. Until now, America was not anti-Semitic or was not behaving in a hostile way to the Jewish people, but in a very kind way. But the other places were behaving that way. But now that's changing as well, as we said earlier. So the Rebbe says, so you see a change as we're getting closer to Mashiach, clearly. However, he says, what caused this? Obviously, that we're getting closer to the Messianic age. Particularly, he says, this path was accomplished through the work of the great leaders of the Jewish people, in which they interacted with the leaders of the nations. That work that they did, although they were up against very hostile leaders, they were able to sweeten it slowly but surely to change, to chip away at the anti-Semitism, and to change the attitudes. He says, and particularly of the Chabad leadership, as spoken many times, the Chabad Rabbeim are the segue and the forces of redemption in this world, and therefore everything that has to happen in the time of the redemption, the train tracks, the foundations were laid by the seven generations of Hasidic masters of Chabad. So the Rebbe says, beginning with the Alter Rebbe, he wasn't just a tzaddik teaching Torah, but he very much interacted and got involved in matters of the world. Particularly, he said that he came and he stood by Tsar Alexander in his war against Napoleon. Now, I'm not going to go into the whole story, but Napoleon was wanted to conquer Russia. The Alter Rebbe felt that if Napoleon would win it would bring horrific destruction spiritually to the Jewish people. Physically, it might improve the situation, but spiritually, the Jewish people's heart would become completely severed from, or to a very almost completely, who knows what would happen in terms of a complete assimilation. And therefore, to save the Jewish people, the Alter Rebbe helped Tsar Alexander in his war against against Napoleon. So that was a work that the Alter Rebbe did to help the Jewish people through a nation, through the nations of the world. Although it was only spiritual help, we gained assistance through a non-Jewish army and to help and improve the Jewish people, but only spiritually. But the Rebbe says the work that the Alter Rebbe did then, that improved the lot of the Jewish people spiritually, but not physically, 200 years later, its repercussions is now changing Russia as well. See, the Rebbe is seeing it as a continuation of what the Alter Rebbe said 200 years ago. 200 years ago, he stood up on the side of and assisted the Russians against the French to assist for the Jewish people. Although that at that time it was only spiritual and not physical assistance, because physically it became worse for the Jewish people under the Russians than under the French. But eventually, being that you can say that the physical follows the spiritual, 200 years later, this incredible metamorphosis that we're watching in Russia is still connected to the work the Alter Rebbe did. Interesting. That they are now assisting the Jewish people to go to Israel. And now the Rebbe offers a prayer. And he says, let this be the will of God, that this should continue to improve more and more in a way, and more that it becomes more and more revealed, to the point that it should, all the limitations that have been holding it back till now. This is a prayer that we can say, that the Rebbe is saying for today's days, that when it's so important for the nations, forget about the Jews, people are going to be okay no matter what, but it's so important for the nations to side with Israel, and everybody should stand up for Israel. So all the limitations of giving assistance to Israel and to the Jewish people wherever they are should fall away. All the barriers should collapse. Also, and in the recognition of the nations of the importance of the Jewish people and their ownership over the land of Israel. Because every single Jew, it's not just Jews who live in Israel, every single Jew has a parcel of land that he or she owns in the land of Israel. It is ours, and it belongs to every Jew, to people, Jews who live in Canada, Jews who live in Mexico, Jews who live in the United States, in Australia. Every single Jew across the continent has a piece of land in the land of Israel, God's gift to them. And the nations should recognize this, and the faster they recognize it, the better it is for everybody. This is all in accordance to what Rashi says in the beginning of the parasha, like we said earlier. The power of his deeds, Hashem revealed to the people in order to give to them the inheritance of nations, that if nations one day will come and challenge the Jewish people's right to the land of Israel, the Jewish people will answer them and say as follows: the entire world belongs to God. He created it, and he gave it to those who he decides. With his will, he gave it to the early settlers of that land, and with his will, which were not Jewish, and with his will, he retracted it from them, took it away from them, and gave it to the Jewish people, took it from them, and he gave it to Israel. And like, it says over here in parentheses, the Rebbe says, and like it has been announced, literally in these days, I don't know what he's referring to over here, but there was some kind of a world forum, which sounds very unlike the UN, I'm not sure exactly under which forum this was decided, that there was a forum of Gentile leaders or people in which they made a declaration announcement that Israel, and particularly Hebron, which is in the Judah area, right, belongs to the Jewish people, like it says in their own Bible. Their words that they use, they refer to the Torah, the Rebbe says, in their Bible, that they, their main religious text that millions of people follow, right? Billions of people. They also hold it as a sacred text. It says clearly that Hebron was purchased by Abraham. It belongs to the Jewish people. So this is all a prayer, the Rebbe says, let this become strong. We see this tremendous resistance, but the Rebbe is praying, let this increase and increase and increase. Now, from here, we go to chapter 9, in which we're kind of rounding it up and concluding it almost to the end. Now, we have to make him one introduction. There was a rabbi in Israel, not going to say his name, who was revered by one of the, by probably, you know, thousands and thousands of followers, who spoke on many occasions very, very harshly about the Jewish people in Israel. He had very, very extreme opinions. One of the opinions were that the Jews that are not keeping Torah and mitzvot, God forbid, are bringing a Holocaust on the world. And he said terrible things. He wasn't careful when he spoke. He would shoot off like a cannon, and he would say things. And thousands of people took his word as of like, because he definitely is a Torah sage, but had, let's just say, was spiritually challenged on some level. In any case, one of the speeches during that time, obviously everybody knows tremendous pressure on Israel to relinquish land and kind of appease the Arabs by giving land, which the Rebbe was crying and said, it's only going to whet the appetite for more, and it's going to bring the worst types of, like we see, the Jewish people relinquished Gaza, and this is what we got. Every time the Jewish people show weakness, it only shows the enemy that if they kill enough Jews, God forbid, if they fight hard enough, eventually the Jews will give up and we will leave the land and they'll be able to take over the entire land of Israel and drive the Jewish people into the sea. That's the Rebbe's take, that you don't give an inch. You don't even talk about it. It's off the negotiating table. The Rebbe was crying that if you negotiate, if it's on the table, that itself is bringing death and suffering. It should have been off the table from the very beginning. The Rebbe was very against the Camp David Accords with Begin, that the Jewish people gave Sinai. And the Rebbe says, every piece of land you conquer in a war, you hold on to it and show the enemy, you fight us, you're just going to lose territory. You're going to lose. The Rebbe was bleeding his heart out that we shouldn't give an inch. And there's hundreds of talks. This rabbi had another opinion. He was saying that the Jewish people need to cave into world pressure. Why? And he was supporting it by the fact that the Jewish people's existence, this is one of the words he said, Jewish people's existence is dependent on the nations. Because we're in exile, so we're dependent on the goodwill of the nations. And he brought Talmudic sources supporting it, that you're not allowed to provoke the nations. And if the UN or people of the United States of America, the government, I don't know whoever it was at that time, was putting pressure on Israel to negotiate on land, which we saw later turned out to be Oslo Accords, which brought the biggest catastrophe and bloodshed, which we're still suffering from today, on the Jewish people. So this rabbi was supporting all of this and called that that Israel should not rebel against the nations and not stand strong and negotiate and so on and so forth. And he said, because the Jewish people are dependent on the nations. So here is where the Rebbe is directing his words to this rabbi and saying, God forbid for a Jewish rabbi to speak such words. How in the world do you utter, God forbid, especially in public, especially to people who are coming to study Torah by you? This is what you're saying. He says, all the years, not one Jew could have even thought of something, especially a rabbi that has rabbinic ordinance. How can you say something like this? And the Rebbe says, first of all, the Rebbe says 4 points. Number one, God forbid to say that that the Jewish people's continuity and survival is even questionable. In other words, the premise is that since we are hanging on a hinge over here, since we're still in exile, and we're dependent on the assistance of the United States of America and the arms they're giving, and if God forbid, without this assistance, our enemies might obliterate us. This is the premise. So therefore, we gotta stay friends. This is what they were saying. The Rebbe is saying, you're saying right now that the existence of the Jewish people is in limbo. He says, that itself is blasphemy. How do you say something like that? Just like God is eternal, the Jewish people are eternal. We are forever and ever. There isn't even a possibility of a possibility that there should be a wipeout of Israel, of the Jewish people. That's number one. And he brings a verse. There's a verse in Malachi, which it says, God says, I have not changed, and you, the Jewish people, have also not know, have never been ended, because just like I cannot be destroyed, you will never be destroyed. And many, many verses, the Rebbe says, and many other verses. So the premise itself is deeply flawed. Point number two, he says. And that's the very, just the notion of saying that the Jewish continuity is shaky. That itself is completely wrong. Point number two is that that our chances for survival are dependent on the nations. The Rebbe says, are you kidding? He says, God, every child, every Jewish child who begins to learn Torah starts with the first verse. And in the first verse, it says, Bereishis, in the beginning. And what do we learn? Rashi says that the entire world was created for the Jewish people, was created for the Torah. So if the nations were created to support the Jewish people, are you going to say that the Jewish existence is dependent on the nations? Their entire existence is here. The nations are dependent on Israel. Israel is not dependent on anybody, only on God. And God made his covenant with Israel forever. So it's the most ridiculous, ludicrous thing to say. In the words of the Rebbe, it's understood the Pashtus literally, that the nations of the world are not the owners of the Jewish people, God forbid. They don't own us, and they don't control us. And the Rebbe says, this is so fundamental. You know, you would think that in Torah, it's important where something is stated. You would think that the beginning of the Torah is very, very, every word of Torah is the divine, so it's infinitely important. But you understand that something that is like super important would be at the beginning and at the end, right? He says, it's not just at the beginning. It's not somewhere in the beginning. It's the first word of Torah, in which is this rabbi is a big Torah scholar. The Rebbe says, hold on, it's a big Torah scholar. So he's what makes him kind of a rabbi is that he studies Torah. He says that the first word of Torah, in which the entire written Torah, the scriptures are all based on this word. And then from there, the entire oral Torah, which is the Talmud and everything, it's all rooted on what? On this one word. It all starts with this word. And what's the first word? This idea that the entire world is created for Israel and for the Jewish people. And notwithstanding all of this, the Rebbe says, a Jewish person gets up and announces from a podium in front of many, many, many people, tens and tens of Jews that came to hear Torah from him, that the existence of the Jewish people is dependent on the nations. And he says the shock of it is even greater. When did he give the speech? After the holidays. He says an entire month of holidays we spent repeating in our prayer. It's a prayer that we only say during the holidays. We don't say it during the rest of the year. And we declare it loud and clear. We keep on saying it again. You have chosen us from all the nations, and you have elevated us from all the languages. So it's so simple, it's so basic that no one even thought, he says, that we would even have to talk about this, especially even to the nations, let alone that we should have to clarify this for a Jew. I'm quoting literally almost verbatim, he says, even the nations of the world recognize that the Jewish people are the chosen people. And in all the generations, this was something so simple. Even in the generations where there was so much anti-Semitism and there was so much concealment and Jews were so persecuted, like at the time and the darkness became so strong, especially the spiritual darkness, like the time of the Jewish Enlightenment, which was the time when many Jews kind of went away from the traditions of Torah and created kind of their own religion, so to speak. He says, even then, when it was so dark, a rabbi who has rabbinic ordinance would never stand up and make such a statement. That's number two. Number one is to suggest that the Jewish people are, their existence is in question, is blasphemy. It doesn't say the word blasphemy, but it's utterly shocking to suggest that the nations of the world are our protectors and our existence is dependent on them is ludicrous, because it goes against the very, very, very foundation of existence that God created all of the world to support the Jewish people and Torah. And in that comes the blessings to all the nations. Point number three, he says, this that he argues, that I'll say in the Talmud, that you're not supposed to stop provoke the nations. That's true. You're not supposed to provoke the nations to start up. You're living amongst them. You're not supposed to be an instigator. That's 100% true. But that has nothing to do, God forbid, that based on the idea that we are receiving arms from America and a lot of financial assistance, he says this has nothing to do, the Rebbe says, it's understood that has nothing to do with the fact that of the fundamental principle of Torah, that in the beginning God created the world, and that the beginning means for the sake of Israel and the sake of the Jewish people, God created the world. So yeah, that's true. As we discussed earlier, there are certain areas where we're not supposed to provoke the nations, but it doesn't mean that just because we're told that means that the nations have supremacy over Israel. God forbid. Point number three, the Rebbe says, and this is very important, the very idea that he's bringing, that you're not supposed to start up with the nation. So when the UN is putting pressure, or the United States of America president is trying to exert pressure on the Israeli government or whatever it is, that they should consider relinquishing land, the Rebbe says, when are we told not to fight, not to provoke against the nations? When the nations are not asking us to violate the Torah. But in a case when they're asking us to do something that's against the Torah, we are not only shouldn't we listen, we're allowed to provoke, meaning not listen, and openly defy what the nations tell us. Why? Because we learned earlier, when it comes to our Torah, God has given us the right to keep it, and no one has a right to tell us what to do. Now the Rebbe says like this, there is a law in Torah. This is a law in Torah, which says that if there's a Jewish city, and the Jewish city is being attacked, so even though on Shabbat there are certain laws, and we're not allowed to, you know, carry on Shabbos, and definitely not to fire a gun and do all these things, but suddenly, if people come, like happened two weeks ago Shabbat in the south of Israel, where the nations came on Shabbat, and it happened by a border city, because the law is that in general, when a pogrom is coming to the Jewish people have to lift arms and they go and they defend themselves. They don't negotiate, they don't talk, they don't relinquish, they go and fight the enemy and do what they do, especially today that there is an Israeli army and Israel's got the firepower. So the Rebbe says it's a rule, it's a law that's what you do. You don't consider anything else. It says that even now, so the law is as follows in the laws of Shabbat. If they are coming just because they want, you know, there's a Jewish city surrounded by Gentiles, they're coming to loot. The words of the sage, they're coming, you know, for to loot. Then not necessarily you go and you fight them on Shabbat, because it's not a question of life. So, okay, you might have to sit quietly during Shabbat and not on, because of Shabbos, you're not allowed to fight. Okay, wait, don't leave this. This is just, again, if they're coming, just, you know for sure they're not coming to harm anybody. They're coming to rob, fine. If you know they're coming like a pogrom, and they have their thirst for Jewish blood, then you're obligated to take up arms and fight them even on Shabbat. Okay. This is all true. The law says if it's a city that's not at the border, it's somewhere. But if it's at the Jewish land and it's a border city, like in this case, in what happened last week, so then even if they're coming just to steal bicycles, or the words of the halacha is they're coming to take straw, they're coming to take something very meaningless, you go out immediately with blazing guns and tanks and you decimate them. That's the rule. That's the Jewish law. So the Rebbe says we have a halacha in Torah that's what we're supposed to do. So therefore, if nations in the world are putting pressure for us to act differently, then we from Jewish law have to ignore the United Nations, ignore the United States president if he's the one who's giving that pressure, or wherever it is, and do the Jewish thing. And don't worry what the nations will do. They'll stop financing, because don't worry, God has got us covered either way. Okay? That's the idea. Okay, so based on these are the four principles that the Rebbe is speaking about, this rabbi. But what is the solution, the Rebbe is saying? let it be the will that this rabbi should get up public, should retract his words, should retract his terrible words that he said. Because even King David was able to admit that he made a mistake. King David said, you know, shgiyos miyavin, which means mistakes that I made unintentionally, right? So the Rebbe says, I hope, let it be the will that he should retract his words. And definitely that he should not make his, he should not start defending himself and make his words that he said, his mistake, his mistaken words, you know, drive it into even a bigger blunder by trying to defend itself. Because the Rebbe says, it won't help you because truth eventually is going to come in anyway. So you're going to try to say, I meant like this, I didn't say it like this. You know, it's so just get up and apologize and say those words were misspoken. And the main thing the Rebbe says, we shouldn't even have to speak about this from now and onward. Because from now and onward, from today and onward, everybody should only speak. Rabbis should only speak in the praise of Israel and the greatness of the Jewish people. And specifically because since the Jewish people add in Torah study and in doing mitzvah, especially by learning Chitas, Chumash, Tehillim, Tanya, which are the three, which we speak about that in the beginning that we learned the Torah at this time of the year, Simchas Torah, and more than that. And mostly, the Rebbe is concluding with blessings over here, mostly that it should continue to increase the recognition of the nations of the world. They should be recognized in the world, including the nations of the world, the quality of the Jewish people, the praise of Israel, and how Bereishis B'shul Yisrael, how God created everything for the sake of the Jewish people and the blessings that they're going to bring to the world. And that it should increase the recognition that Israel belongs to the Jewish people until we will see the completion of this in the full and complete redemption, when not only will Israel have what it has now, but major swaths of land, another three nations, another three big areas are going to be attached to the land of Israel. It's going to become much, much bigger. And let this happen, take up, because that's the gift that God gave, promised it to Abraham. And let it be right now when Shabbos Bereishis, this should happen. The revelation of the greatest miracles, Kimetzeis Chomeretz Mitzrayim, may this be through the complete redemption through Mashiach Tzidkenu. And we should go immediately into the parsha of Noach, which Noach means calmness. There should be a calmness in the world, a satisfaction above, a satisfaction below. And from there we march into the year of, to the Torah portion of Lech Lecha, the third Torah portion, where God tells Abraham, go from your land, from your birthplace, from your father's house, and go to the land that I will show you. What does that mean? That's really a call to all of Israel. It's time to make Aliyah. The Rebbe is not saying at that time, but he said, let it be revealed that it should become the time for all the Jewish people to make Aliyah, and everybody should go to the land of Israel, including all the people who passed away and are buried. And he says, when God tells Abraham, well, Abraham is the patriarch of the Jewish people to go to Israel, so it should also be, that should be fulfilled regarding the patriarchs of the Hasidic movement, who are the great Hasidic rabbis, who are buried in the diaspora. They're buried in three cities, the Rebbe says, in the Ukraine. One is called Hadich, where the Alter Rebbe is buried. One is called Niezhin, where the second Rebbe, the middle Rebbe, is buried. And the third one is Lubavitch, where the Tzemach Tzedek and the Rebbe Marash. These are three cities in Russia, Ukraine, where the fathers of the Hasidic movement are buried, and they're called fathers, patriarchs. And just like God told the patriarchs to go to the land, they too should be uprooted, not uprooted, they should be through the resurrection, and they as well should come to the land of Israel in the fulfillment, and they should come together with all the rabbi. It's interesting that he doesn't mention the previous rabbi in New York, and all of our rabbis and all the tzaddikim and the Jewish people from all the generations. He implies the previous rabbi because he says all of our other rabbis, he already mentioned everybody. Maybe he also means the Baal Shem Tov and the Magid. And we all go to the Holy Land and to Jerusalem, the holy city, to the holy mountain, to the third temple, to the Holy of Holies, and may that be instantly right now.